Good morning. This is Gaming Perspectives with
Saul
and Jolene. And today we're talking about how to be a good GM.
So number one for me is be prepared, right? Whether it's a home game, con game, whatever game, have your stuff ready, do your homework, and know the rules. First thing is know the rules of the game, right? If whatever game you're running, especially if you've never ran it before, it's very important that you read the rules, right?
Because you don't want to be sitting at a table and be the GM and have the players know the rules better than you.
Well, and then that might happen no matter how long you've played the game or something, but know the basic rules, right? Know the basic mechanics, and then go from there. I think depending on the game and depending on your players, what kind of group of players you have, I think it's good to know at the very least the basics of the way the game works. Know your scenario, right? When you make your game, whether it's a module or whether it's one of your own, know the game that you're running, right? Know the situation or the adventure that's going to happen.
We've talked about that before. It's always kind of annoying if the GM has to stop and read something for 20 minutes before.
Right. It's okay to let me look at my notes real quick. And then you for a name or something that, you know, and there's different ways you can combat that. Be organized, have maybe
note cards.
Note cards or post-it notes on important things or important people, especially people who are going to, the characters are more likely to meet.
Non-player characters and things like that.
Non-player characters, what I meant, yes. So, you know, be organized, right? That goes, it's a long way, but, you know, I'm not going to tell people to be organized because I'm not very organized sometimes when I run games. And sometimes it shows, right? I remember one time, I think I had it all ready to go, and then somebody asked me a major NPC's name, and I'm like, I'm looking for it. I'm like, hold on. And so, you know, that kind of sucked, right? So, you know, everybody can be a little bit better organized. And I think those little post-it notes, those little flags that you put in your book, and they peel right off. I've used them on my rule books, and that really helps. And you can even use them in your own notes, right? You can put the name of the character, or this is the name of the NPC. And then you know, if you have a lot of notes, and you could just go right to that character where that post-it note is, and it tells you the character, their name, and just some vital statistics and stuff like that. So being organized and being prepared as much as possible, something any good GM should aspire to be, you know, organized, be knowledgeable about the game, be ready for the game that you're going to run.
And know the characters that are in your game, especially if you've had them pre-made, make them, you're going to have gotten the backstories. You can gel them all together that way. Or if it's a session zero, you can work on the backstories and take notes and have people give you their notes on their backstories.
Right. And so, yeah. So know the characters, right? So you're not surprised when they whip out something that they have on a character sheet, and then you're like, oh, that's not going to work. Or you're going to try to tell them that they don't have something, or they don't have a certain skill like that. You know, that's happened to me. I remember one time we were playing, I was running Pathfinder, and one of the players had made a character that makes items, right? Makes magical items. And I was running a game that I didn't allow people to make magic items. They had to be super high level wizards or whatever. And I just didn't want to get into the whole idea of these guys, of the player characters, you know, setting up a side business and abusing it, because it could easily be abused. I thought the rules were easily, they could be abused. And so I didn't allow, this player had made this character based on making artifacts, right? In the future, right? He was still low level. So then I let him remake his character. I said, I'm sorry, you know, I don't allow that. I'm not going to allow that. So I didn't look at your character, obviously, that closely. And so it was a big mistake on my part. And he was upset, you know, and rightfully so, because it was my fault that I didn't tell him, you know, those kind of rules that I should have said at the very beginning.
So when you do ask the players to give you a copy of their character sheet, it's important to actually read it and know what they can do.
Right. Yeah. Don't be surprised at the game table. Especially if they gave you a character sheet beforehand, you should look at that.
And if you are surprised at the game table, admit your mistake and, like Saul, you know, explain what happened. The next thing is, when the people come to your house or wherever it is, make sure everything is prepared. The table and right. Everything is set up.
Oh, the physical stuff.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And usually that's pretty easy. Most people have a dining room table. We have a dining room table. We don't play at it. It's kind of, we have a very small dining area.
We could only fit like two people and a mouse or something in there.
Well, we could probably fit a few other people if we cleared out some stuff. But anyway, so we have a very small dining area, but some people have a large formal dining room. But we play in our living room on a portable folding table. And so we have all kinds of folding chairs that we bring out when we have to and have a game and stuff. And sometimes our groups is pretty large, so we have like 8 players. And then there's a lot of chairs everywhere, right? So have that ahead of time, ready to go. I mean, that's just logistically a good idea.
That makes the game a lot nicer if everything is set up when people get there. And you've asked people, or people have asked you what they can bring, and there's snacks and things like that. So just to make sure that you have the setting right.
Right.
When your players show up.
Yes. So going on to another topic is... pay attention to your players, right? I have, you have as a GM, listen to what they say, and also kind of, you know, even try to pay attention to the nonverbal cues. This is helps in figuring out if people are having a good time or they might be bored. If you're talking to your players, then they have a less chance of not paying attention and not being in the game.
Also in that, sometimes people come to a game and they're there. They may not feel good or something like that. So you might notice this.
Right.
If you're a good GM, you may notice it. They may be hiding it really well, but it's always good to talk to people before you start playing just to see how people are doing.
Or even during the game, if you notice, you know, if you notice that somebody's not their usual self and you start, you know, and then, you know, not in game, but maybe out of game, say, are you okay? You know, is everything all right? And then, you know, they may or may not be okay. And we can go from there as to whether you're going to stop the game or not. Jolene noticed, it wasn't me who noticed, but Jolene noticed that one of our friend's kids was not feeling well. And then we noticed that he kept leaving the table to go to the bathroom. And it turns out that he was throwing up in the bathroom. So the game ended about pretty much right then and there because I didn't want to continue and have a chance of him getting worse.
So these are important things to notice.
Right.
You never know. Players, you know, have lives, so they could have had a bad week at work.
Right.
They're here and they want to enjoy it, but they may not really feel like participating that day. So you can take those things into consideration. And you're not going to push people to, you know, you always talk every game and this game you have to talk. If they're having a bad day, you can just let them sit there and enjoy what's going on around them, and it might help them to relax and stuff like that.
And pay attention to the players, right? What they say as far in game, right? When they're talking, it's a bad idea to say, okay, hold on, I wasn't paying attention to you. Can you repeat everything you said?
Yeah, that might be a sign of not a good GM.
Yeah, or a distracted GM, right? You know, understand that there's only one GM. You're the only GM, and there might be 2 or 3 players asking you questions. You gotta be able to listen to each of one of them and hear their comments. So you gotta, you know, direct traffic in that sense and say, okay, hold on, you two, hold on, I can't hear all of you at once, you know, and then talk to the one person and then you know, direct traffic in that sense. I think that goes to a long way to making sure that nobody feels left out, nobody feels like they're not paying attention to them, and you know, you don't want players feeling that way anyway.
And so if one person is talking the whole time, you might want to say, look at the other players and go, what would you like to do?
Right.
What are your ideas? What is your character doing right now? Things like that to make sure that everybody gets to be in the spotlight, gets to have a moment to tell you what they want to do, because somebody may be trying to just talk over everybody.
Right. So going on is as a GM, you shouldn't be vindictive. Now, this usually doesn't happen with a bunch of strangers or people you don't know, but and it doesn't usually happen anymore. I haven't seen a vindictive GM. Well, at a con game, I think once, but for the most part, this is like old type of GMs, right? Who believe that it's the players versus the GM, right? That kind of thinking.
He's bringing out the dinosaurs.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I just remember just a certain GMs that. Like, you kill their favorite monster, or you kill their big bad guy, right? That's supposed to be the end battle. And by the roll of the dice, or by the trickery of the players, and the luck of the characters, or whatever, they kill your big bad in, like, one round, or in the first few seconds of the encounter. And you're, like, really upset. So you bring in big bad number 2 times two, right?
So double, you know, double his hit points and yes, double, don't let him touch him.
Double his hit points, raise his armor class, you know, that kind of stuff. And so, you know, if they won fair and square, you know, over one, if they killed your character, your NPC, your big bad monster fair and square, you know, that's just what you got to deal with as a GM.
So you have a choice then. If they kill him in one round, then you're like, maybe you don't know what to do. Maybe you've only been playing for 2 hours and it was supposed to be a 6-hour game. So then you might have to take a little breather and go, well, you just killed off the boss. So what are we going
to
do now?
You have to tell him that. But one of the group that I listen to, a podcast I listen to, they say, oh, I'm going to go to the bathroom. And they don't really go to the bathroom. They just go to the bathroom with their notebook and try to figure out what to do then. So they take about 10, 15 minutes.
This doesn't always happen, but he is right about old school GMs. Once in a while, they do have that idea that, you know, you're doing a dungeon crawl and you kill everything. And they don't like that because they're trying to kill you. But I don't think most GMs are like that.
No, that's rare, but, you know, just try not to be vindictive, right? If they kill your favorite NPC, your favorite bad guy, your favorite monster too quickly, you know, don't use monster 2.0 rules. You know, just let them have their victory and continue running your game.
And always try to everybody's going to get upset. And right. The GM, that includes the GM. Yeah. So if a character dies, that person might get upset. Or if the character can't do what they want to do, they'll get upset. But you should, you know, moderate yourself and right. Not be too mean to other people.
So Jolene had no idea. We discussed this and she goes, what the heck are you talking about? I said, don't give the illusion of chance or choice, right? So then when I told her what it was, she goes, oh my God, that is horrible. And that is, don't get, let's say somebody wants to, she was using the example of climbing on top of a building and to scout around. And so the GM hasn't prepared for this, so he doesn't want the player to go up there. So he goes, okay, go ahead, give me a roll. And so the person goes, oh, okay, let's say we're playing Dungeons and Dragons. And they get a 20, right? And then they, you know, they roll the highest number they can get with their skill. And then the GM goes, oh, yeah, no, you still can't get it. It's not high enough.
It's basically, if you don't want them to do something or you're not prepared for it, instead of letting them roll and think that they might actually do it, that's not nice. I mean, they want to climb up the building to see what's going on. So you could just say, oh, you climb up the building and you don't see anything if you're not prepared for it. Or you could make it a moment where they actually could climb up the building, but don't let them think that they can actually do it and then take it away from them because, oh, you have to roll a 40 to do that.
Oh, you don't tell them that, but like, let's say the player rolls a 20 and it's the maximum they can roll. And then you say, well, yeah, you still don't make it. Well, you know, well, why even, you know, like if a character was alive, right, and he's accessing whether he can climb something, he has all the skill that he needs, let's say a thief or whatever, or a rogue these days, and he should or she be able to figure out, okay, that is an inclimbable wall for me with my skill set or my athletic ability or whatever, and with my abilities and skill set. And then this illusion of that I have a chance by rolling the dice and then figuring out that, oh, I never had a chance, that really pisses people off. I mean, people, the players, and I think, you know, and I think it's just not fair, right? It's not a very good thing to do to a player.
So if you don't want someone to go up on a building or you're not going to give them a chance to do something, don't let them think they can.
Don't say, oh, go ahead and roll. Yeah, that's a terrible idea.
Because if you tell them to roll and then you tell them, oh, you didn't make it, but they rolled as high as they could, then you may not have that player may be vindictive against you.
Well, you'd certainly be upset. I mean, I think that's happened to me once or twice. Where I'm like, well, why did you let me roll? Because you wanted a chance. I go, I had no chance no matter what. So, well, what was the point of me rolling?
So it's better for you as a game master to say, well, there's nothing to see from the top of the building, or
just let them get up there and say, okay, there's nothing up there. You don't see anything. But bada bing, bada boom, it's over.
Yeah, at least you let them do what they wanted to do.
Okay. So, yeah. So don't give the illusion of choice or chance. Choice or chance. I say another good thing GM does is go with the player's good ideas, even if it's an idea that you didn't think of. I think I used the example of a space opera game I was in. They had they did something that I hadn't thought of, and I go, man, that is a good idea. And then the second thought was, that's a lot better than my idea. So I went with it, right? You know, my I hadn't planned on what they were doing, and that's a big no-no, is to plan on what the players are going to do. But it hadn't occurred to me that was something they could do. And I went along with it, and actually, it was hugely entertaining for me because you know, sometimes when I write adventures, I kind of think of an idea of how it could be solved, or how the players are going to be able to deal with the situation. And when it would come up with a situation I have never even occurred to me, I am being entertained, right? Because I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how it's going to end. So that's a pretty important thing.
The players are actually helping you create the story there.
Yes. And then it's shared storytelling, right?
One of the things about that is that as a player, when you run into a GM who has a certain idea about what is going to happen,
right,
and you give him all these ideas and he tells you, no, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
Every idea gets shot down at the table. And then as a player, you're looking at each other and you're going, well, how do we get past this? What do we do? Do we need to turn around? Or you're trying to figure out what it is the GM wants you to do because he's not giving you a clue. He's not helping you out.
Wow. Yeah. I remember a game I wasn't in. And he was he's a friend of mine from way back, and he was running a game at a con, and you know, I purposely didn't want to play in his game because you know he has that kind of mentality where he thinks of a certain way of doing things, and if you don't do that certain way, then the game stalls, and that's exactly what happened. I visited the game and a couple times, and the second time I visited, the players were just like, they're literally pulling their hair out of their head because they were like, we can't figure it out. And they had some amazing ideas. I mean, they were really coming up with some ideas because they told us what they had done. Because I just walked in and said, hey, what's going on? And it was just this, and his idea was okay. It was interesting. It was a way of breaking into a compound, right? And so they had come up with all kinds of crazy ideas, you know, pretending to be cops, pretending to be CIA, the pizza delivery boy, and all this other stuff, and none of it worked. And then the game just stalled.
So as a GM, you should always be flexible. If the players aren't coming up with the idea that you had, that doesn't mean that it's pick one of their ideas. Let them do it. Be able to move stuff around a little bit. Don't be stuck. You don't have to railroad people into doing
right
it the way that you want to do it, because they are all going to have ideas, and maybe they're not the same as yours. Maybe they're not as good as the idea that you had, but if the people don't come up with the specific idea you right wanted them to come up with, allow them to do what they want to do.
The solution. Yeah. If you only have one solution and they're not getting it, and after, you know, a long time, you know, the next idea that they come up with, that should be the solution, because nobody wants to sit there and just okay, how about this? Okay, I try your yellow key. You know, it's like, you know, not Simon Says, but like a keypad. Okay, you have a four numbers. And, you know, who wants to be pushing buttons?
I've tried 367 combinations now. Can we move on?
Yeah, only 1,345,602 combinations left.
And it can be frustrating for GMs too, because in the big game that we did with three different GMs, my brother-in-law had that problem. And he's really good, but he got frustrated with the players because he had this idea of how they were going to solve the puzzle.
The puzzle, yeah.
And they wouldn't, and they didn't get, they were trying and they were getting really close, but they didn't quite do it. And it was really hard for him because we needed to move on. And I finally told him, just give them the information, have it, whatever they do, give it to them.
Yeah.
And it was like something clicked right then. And I know that I could tell he was frustrated. It had been a really long night. So sometimes as a GM, you may be an excellent GM, but sometimes the players don't do what you need them to do. And sometimes you just have to give it to them.
Oh, they're just not thinking in the same wavelengths that you were thinking when you made up this puzzle. Now, I have no idea what the puzzle was, but for me, I would never put a puzzle in one of my games unless it was super easy, right? I mean, unless it was like something a five-year-old could
do. I don't think it was hard. I think it was just the frustration of...
Right.
Of
Yeah. Once frustration hits on either side, if you're trying to solve a puzzle, and you can't, and then you get frustrated, that puzzle's not going to get solved. I mean, no matter how easy it is, that's basically what it comes down to. So understand that something might be easy, but the players just may not get it. You know, they don't get how to make the color green from blue and yellow or something like that, right?
So sometimes you just have to, like Saul says, take one of their ideas and roll with it.
Yeah, definitely. So next is communicate with the group, right? About what type of game you want to play and what kind of game you're trying to run, right? So this is important because let's say you're running, you say, oh, I'm going to run a D&D game. So everybody goes, okay, I know what a D&D game is. And whether you make whether the players make their characters on their own, or you have a session zero, session zero will definitely help in this situation. But definitely convey anything anything that, about your game that you're going for, right?
Like if you don't want them to have certain stats, you don't want them to do under 10, or you don't want them to throw all of their stats into a 18, or things like that.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about the campaign itself. Oh. For example, like let's say you want to run a grim, dark fantasy, right? Something like Warhammer Fantasy or some other dark, you know, drudgery fantasy where the players are slogging through the evil lord has won. Like let's say like Lord of the Rings, but let's say in this world Sauron won the war and the orcs are in power and the humans and the elves are enslaved and all this other stuff. So, but then the characters make this high fantasy, you know, or that's the game they want to play. So right off the bat, you're gonna run into problems, right? You're gonna run into problems that you're both thinking different kind of games, the players and or the GM. So if you want to, you know, run a post-apocalyptic game with serious a serious post-apocalyptic game where they're counting bullets, they're counting the cans of food they have each day, and they have to ration out their food. And the players want to play something like Paranoia, right? Where they're goofy, slapstick kind of game. And, you know, you're just on different wavelengths. So make sure that when you present the game, you present what kind of game you want to play. Just so neither side won't be happy or upset about the situation.
Well, as a player, like when a GM says we're going to play Call of Cthulhu, I usually don't, because I don't like the idea of going insane, and I don't like the idea of not being able to fight monsters because you really need to run away all the time, not being a hero and things like that. It depends on the kind of game you're going to play.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to get into the Call of Cthulhu thing, but anyway, so Call of Cthulhu is definitely like a different type of game. If somebody wants to play a heroic, you know, 1920s, you know, Sam Spade, tough guy, you know, wants to shoot at everything, you know, that's not going to work in a classic Call of Cthulhu setting where, you know, most likely a gun isn't going to help you very much. You're going to go insane and you're going to lose your character, right? You know, that's just the way the game usually runs.
But a lot of people like playing Call of Cthulhu, obviously, because it's huge. It's just certain people don't. So right. if you're invited to a game and you don't like the genre or something like that, you may not want to play it. You may want to if you want to expand your ideas and things like that. But if you're not going to have fun, then you might not want to do that.
Sometimes as a GM, there's a game you bought, certain rules that you have, and you really want to try it out. And none in your normal group want to play.
And this is all.
Yeah, that's my life. The players don't want to play that kind of game. You look for another group, look for a group online. There's all kinds of meetups. There's all kinds of ways you can get the group that you want to run the specific game that you want to play. Next is know your players, right? So let's say you know your players. You know what kind of games they like. And if you want, you can run a game that they kind of want to play. And as a GM, you know, this is kind of like, you know, you're falling on the sword, right? Let's say you don't want to run that game, but nobody else wants to GM it. You know, run the game that they want to run, that they want to play in. You know, and then or you know, bargain with them. Oh, this is the game you guys want to play. This game, but after this one, how about we play this game that I want to run, you know, or whatever. I think if you know the players and you know your group, you know what they like or don't like. Like Jolene, I know I'm not gonna run a Call of Cthulhu game. My sons don't want to play in a Call of Cthulhu game because they don't want to go insane and lose their characters, and that's not what they're about. That's not where they're at in role playing. I'm sure a lot of people love that game. A lot of people don't mind going insane, and it's all about the Cthulhu myth. But for me and my group, you know, that's not a game that will go very far. Maybe a one shot, maybe, but for the most part, they're not going to run a whole campaign. Well, can you really run a Call of Cthulhu campaign? Because you kind of go crazy after a little while. Anyway, so there you go. So look at your players, know what kind of game they like to play, and run that kind of game for them. Okay, so along those lines, you know, if you prepare the game, if you're one of the best GMs that you can be, if the players don't like that game, you're not going to have fun, and the game is not going to go very well, simply because they don't want to play that game. So, you know, instead of running a game that you want to play, you know, run a game that the players would be interested in. Another thing is, be fair to all players. Now, I don't know, this hasn't come across lately that I know of. I don't know, as a GM, I don't know if I actually favor people over one player over another, or pick on players.
You don't.
But in the old days, when I used to play, when I was much younger, I remember a GM would favor my character or me, I don't know what it was, and would let me do crazy stunts, right? When I could do, you know, this was a traveler game, so I'm running past, you know, laser fire down the runway, and I remember my brother, he's like behind one of those blast barriers that you see like at an airport, right? And for the exhaust of these jets and stuff, and so he literally pokes his head over to check things out, and he gets shot, right?
And so that GM may have favored somebody, and
or disfavored my brother, and it was hilarious because he's like, he was shocked, and I was shocked too, because I'm like, dude, I'm out in the open running, and laser fire is flying by me, and he literally pokes his head over this thing, and he gets shot and knocked out.
So maybe he had done something to upset the GM, and he was being vindictive. So that's something you don't want to do, is be vindictive.
This is the part of being fair, but it was weird because, like, I don't know, because he didn't seem like he liked me more than my brother. But it was funny when he did it. He goes, "What?" And Felipe goes, he even called it out. He goes, Saul's character's running down the middle of the airfield, and he has 100 people shooting at him, doesn't get shot, and then I poke my head over, and the guy goes, "Yeah, that's what happened." And I'm like, it was funny. I don't think he runs games anymore, but he, what I liked about that guy, he had some awesome maps, right? So again, you can have great prepared game, but if you're being unfair, it's not going to be fun.
For the players, it's definitely not going
to
be fun.
Yeah, yes. A good thing to be as a GM is be flexible, right? Roll with the punches. Go where the players go. Go with player ideas. I think we kind of sort of talked about this before, but as a GM, especially these days, as people don't want to be in a railroad, they, you know, as far as I know, I don't want to be in a railroad game. I don't play hex or dungeon crawls anymore, or, you know, not very often, mainly because we did so many dungeon crawls when we were kids. Now I might want to play that in a certain system and try something new along those lines. But when I play those games, it's like, okay, so it becomes very mechanical to me, you know, let's fight this monster and stuff like that. So that's not the kind of game I want to play.
And there's nothing wrong with that if you like dungeon crawls.
Oh no, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that I am at the current state that I'm in, I don't want to play those games that much. So most games are more open-ended. They're more storytelling. You know, the players have a lot more control over the narrative, and so what you have to do as a GM is really work on your narrative control. No, you got to work on your spontaneity, and you got to work on your improvisational skills. There's a lot of games out there now that's a GM that doesn't have, you know, very good improvisational skills is going to have a lot of problems. And I think a lot of games are going that direction. You know, the more you're prepared to, you know, how do you prepare to be improvisational? I don't know. Just work on it. There's a lot of classes out there. I'm sure there's videos on YouTube. I know when I go to conventions, they have They have seminars on being improvisational GM. There's comedy clubs where they do improvisational classes and stuff. And there's all kinds of resources and stuff to help you. I think, you know, I've never taken those classes. I've never been to those seminars. One of my friends, Sean Nittner, puts on a Big Bad Con, and they have a big deal about improvisation seminars, because his game convention is a lot of indie games, and indie games are going that direction. So, you know, and that's a big deal. You know, that's a big deal to be able to think on your feet, to be spontaneous, and being able to react to situations that just surprise you.
Which happens a lot when you're a GM, right? When you're running a scenario. Most important is be flexible. By being flexible, I think Saul means that if your players come up with an idea, I always go back to playing with kids, because you never know, kids are going to come up with all kinds of crazy ideas. So right. You might have your encounters that you have planned and they're not going towards them. So I always tell Saul, you know, if they need to meet the guy on the road, move the road, move the guy. Don't be so hard that they have to do it a certain way. Always go with the ideas that they have. And it's not so much as being improvisational. It is being flexible and knowing that your ideas aren't exactly what's going to happen. Let other people create the story with you. And then you can have the things that you need them to do. If it's a scenario, like a convention scenario where it's a time constraint and you need things to happen, just move the things. Put them, if they want to go over here to do this, then make that encounter move. You don't have to have the encounter in a certain place. It has to do with allowing other people to run a little bit of it.
Right. You know, and Jolene's right. If they need a certain part of piece of information for the game to go on, and you had it set that they're going to go to this tavern and talk to this bartender, well, you know, they don't go to the tavern. Okay, so now what? The game stalls? Now, you know, make the innkeeper where they're staying the person who's allows to give them the information, or that's where they can get the information. Or somewhere, the barber, or wherever they go, you know, that's who they have a chance to gain that information. And especially if you need that information for the game to continue.
If you need the information for them to have it, you can leave it in the middle of the road, or have somebody just walk up to them and tell them.
Make it plausible, but you're right. She's right. You know, give them that information. You know, nobody wants a game that just stalled on because, oh, I have to go to this one tavern in this tavern of three taverns and figure out, you know, who to talk to. You know, that's just, it's not a good idea. And nobody wants to be, you know, and the players don't want to be waiting or trying to figure out that one thing that lets them continue on the adventure.
Especially if it's an investigative adventure, because right. If you have to find out things, if you need to get the clues to figure out what's going on, then the clues need to be movable by the GM. The GM has to have that flexibility to give it to you in a different place. That's a really important thing.
Right. So Jolene says I have a lot, but I do have a lot of role playing games. And one of the things that Gumshoe System does is it's an investigative game. They're all investigative games, no matter what genre it is. And he says, you know, if it's a clue that they need to continue, they automatically get that clue. And what happens is you there's still the element of rolling, of being able to use their investigative skills, you know, in the character skills. And so what he says, or the Robin D. Laws is the maker of that rule set, what he says is give them the basic clue, right? Whatever basic clue that you need for the game to continue. And then if they roll like their investigation or anything else, you know, whatever the situation requires, then they get more information or better information, you know, or information that is more concise and more detailed.
So I'm not the only one who has this idea.
No, unfortunately, somebody else came up with it a few years ago. And so, you should have written a book when you first thought about it. Anyway, so yeah, Robin D. Laws obviously is a very well-known RPG game maker and writer. And so he's been at it for a long time. It was eye-opening to me when I read that. And it makes sense, right? You know, it makes sense with that game that my friend ran at the con. It makes sense for any game where the puzzle where my brother was trying to, not trying to, but my brother had presented the puzzle for the character, for the players, and they weren't solving it, and boom, and your game just stops, right? And then and it just becomes this, nobody wants to be frustrated. Frustration does not equal fun in my or probably anybody's book. So
I don't think that happened to, that doesn't happen to Felipe very often. No. So I no, think no, that no. was a total, because well, he's really good.
No, he is a good GM. And so I think, you know, he tried to come up with this simple puzzle, and Jolene says it was simple. I believe him. I believe both of them. It's just the players just weren't getting it, right? They just don't get it. And so when a clue is causing you the game to stall, then maybe that clue, for whatever reason, that clue was too tough, or just they're just not getting it, give them that clue and let the game continue. And then, like I said, nobody wants to be frustrated at somewhere where they're supposed to be having fun. So the last thing I want to talk about is make your NPCs memorable, right? So if you have certain characters or certain NPCs that are going to interact with your characters, you know, your player characters, you know, make them remarkable, make them a little bit different, give them a description, give them a quirk, or give them an accent. Even if you don't do the accent, you can say, well, he kind of talks with like a kind of like an Australian accent or an English accent or whatever accent you can come think of. You know, give them a flair, so something that sets them apart. Then your players will really appreciate those kind of details.
And remember them.
And remember them, right. Add all these things together will help you become a better GM, because, you know, when you're running a game and you're trying to entertain your players, all these things will factor in into that.
These aren't the only things you can do, but these are just some of them.
I'm sure there's tons of things we didn't talk about. We don't have enough time to list them all. We thought these were the top of what you should consider and think about when you want to, you know, raise your game of being a GM. Some of them are pretty easy to think of, or some of them, you know, you may not have thought of. This is Gaming Perspectives with Saul
and Jolene.
And you have a good day.